name's Bond. James Bond.
You are listening to Cinema D'Amore. We are a movie-based podcast. I am one of your hosts, Justin Morgan, and I am here with
Chuck Phillips.
And we are continuing our theme of the Daniel Craig era of Bond with Quantum of Solace. Possibly because he was well acclaimed in Casino Royale. So he's back. I was more excited for this film than most, and I was let down. Overall, yeah. It's not a bad movie. Well, I guess it kind of is a bad movie.
I mean, it is kind of bad.
The plot is, it kind of got ruined by the writer's strike. I know that this was something that the director and Daniel Craig wrote scenes to, but it seems like they cut out all story and just kept the set pieces in, which I imagine were like the number one planned thing in this movie to begin with. And that's why it's so drastically different than Casino Royale, is that the only moment that we get in this movie that's kind of nice is the very end of this movie. It is literally the last scene of this movie is kind of the what I wish was spread throughout most of it. Because we just had like chaotic chase scenes. It sucks because you have the Jason Bourne series that obviously was like the American version of Bond, I guess. Like that espionage. And it kind of had that like updated shaky cam action going on. And then this is reminiscent of that movie, like it of those series. They try to be like the Bourne movies.
I thought the exact same thing, especially the part where he chases the guy that's like the double agent or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When he's chasing him around on the rooftops and like jumping through the windows and jumping through stuff, and then
anytime there's a window, someone's going through it.
Yeah, he does the same thing. Yeah, that fight scene that he has with that guy when he first shows up in Bolivia or whatever and goes to that hotel, and he's like, yeah, that's like, it reminds me exactly of the Bourne movies where it's like, does no one else hear this in the entire hotel? Like, he's slamming this guy through like glass windows and like throws him through a door.
You had like, one woman who dropped her produce and she was upset by it.
Yeah.
But her reaction was almost like she dropped her produce and was upset. Not that she even realized that people went fighting up the stairs.
Yeah. I feel like the best action scene in this entire film is just that first opening chase, which I really like. And then it feels like the rest of the movie is them trying to like get back to that level.
And this movie has like the most continuity errors. Like, I noticed them right off the bat. His windshield was broken out, then it was back, then it was broken out, then it was back. And then there's that scene when the cops pulled them over on the dirt bikes. And the bike fell over like twice. I'm like, come on. I mean, I know it's not the editor's problem. Like, they probably went with the scenes that had the most emotional impact or were the most interesting. But it's a very sloppy movie overall. And I think what hurts this movie the most is that it never lets up. So nothing ever really feels that exciting. It's just intense from beginning to end. And then when they do have a couple little moments that are like have like downtime, you know, it doesn't last long at all. When Quantum meets up to make their little like deal with Green at that I don't know what you want to call it, the show,
opera or whatever it is, yeah,
the new wave opera. Yeah, it's like
I hate that scene too, because it's like I don't know. I don't know if like pretentious isn't the right word, but I don't know, something about like that real, that like cutting back and forth between like drama going on stage and Bond like flipping over tables and firing guns in the back, yeah, and it just keeps cutting back and forth, and I'm just like, it just like makes it like real, like it just feels choppy and doesn't feel like smooth at all, like the way that they did it. It just feels like real like hacky the way that they went about it.
The editing is weird too though, because like that moment where you're talking about earlier where the guy was fighting through the hotel scene and through that hotel and everything, there's a quick cut of the guy opening up a knife, and then it goes back to Bond, and then the guy busts through the door with a knife. And the editing's bad because it looks like Bond opens a knife. It literally looks like Bond walks into a room, opens a knife, and then a guy busts through the door with a knife, and Bond doesn't have one. That's what it looks like. Your brain's like thrown off. You're like, oh, okay, I see what's actually happening. But I think the piece, like, I'd be really proud if I worked on that movie as far as like the stunts go. The cinematography is fine. It just feels way rushed, and I think that's what kills it more than anything. And yeah, the opera scene, it's like, what, 2 seconds of some sort of opera scene? It's not even really well. It's like, oh, what if they're at the opera? All right. We can only shoot for one day. Oh, that's fine. it doesn't even make sense when Bond is like, he gets on the radio wave and basically calls them out, and then they just all get up and leave. And then that's when he starts getting facial recognition, which I'm like, this doesn't even make any fucking sense. Like, you'd have been better off just staying there. They would have never known who you were.
Yeah, but he had to get him to stand up, because how was he going to know who was who? That's a reason he did it. I know the story reason that he does it, but I don't know. They're still just, there's
people
a lot of
like their heads were like
completely turned around, and then it's like he takes a picture and like the facial recognition like turns their head around in the picture.
Yeah, it's like, we got this.
I thought the same thing. Yeah, it does goofy stuff like that with like that. I'm just like, I don't think that's how facial recognition works, but okay. But
I always
I
think
know.
That scene in Barry. Did you watch Barry?
Mm.
Where they're like, can you zoom in on that face?
Zoom and enhance.
They're like, enhance it, and it like doesn't do anything. He's like, that's only in the movies. Like,
it's only in the movies. You can just zoom, but it's just grainy.
It's just gonna get worse. That's exactly
zoom
what
and enhance. Yeah, that's I think of that. That's always funny with stuff like that. But the
I think of Hitchcock's movies. I think of The Man Who Knew Too Much, or more recently.
That felt like what they were trying to do with this movie.
They wanted the callback for sure. That's what they wanted. They needed some fancy scene because everything was covered in dirt so far in this movie. I think every car and every suit is just like, looks like they just threw dirt at Daniel Craig and called it a day. So they're like, we need him to be more sophisticated. He's James Bond. But I was thinking of, what is it, Rogue Nation? What's the fifth Mission Impossible movie?
Yeah, it's the one you're thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, that is a really fun take on the Hitchcock opera scene, I think, where the espionage is like all their instruments are weapons. Like, they're like turning the flute into a gun. I thought that was pretty clever. And this movie really just has Bond, like, I don't know, chilling, listening, and then fuck it, the scene's over. And he gets in that moment where he pushes that guy off the roof. And
he like doesn't even push the guy. The guy just kind of like pushes his hand off of him and then falls himself off the roof.
I guess that's more accurate. But then he's blamed for shooting the guy off the roof because the guy somehow survived the fall. And then he wasn't a part of Quantum, so they shot him. But I just thought it was really funny that he kind of just got up real casually, like as if he was just standing in front of the car. Like, he wasn't even hurt. He wasn't remotely hurt from the fall or anything.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, and then that's a weird moment because that's where I start to, like, lose it when they start to, they clearly know that there's, like, inside agents from this other organization. That's, like, that's one of the funnier lines in the movie when, after that guy turns out to be a double agent. When Mr. White says, we have people everywhere, and M's like, I know they say we have people everywhere, but you literally don't think it's going to be the guy in the room right there with you at the moment.
His name was like Craig Mitchell or
Craig Mitchell or something. Yeah, something like super generic.
Worst name ever.
Yeah, super super generic name.
They give him that one weird scene. It just feels uncomfortable.
They're like, sweep the perimeter, and he's like, yeah, I'll sweep the perimeter, and then he comes back in and goes, I swept the perimeter, like he makes...
No, the moment when Bond, after they just got Mr. White, brought him in, and he walks past that guy, and the guy's just like, Bond, and he says, Mitchell. I'm like, fuck is this guy?
Oh, yeah, like you're supposed to, like, know who that person is already?
Yeah, like, I mean, the concept is fun. I kind of do like the idea of, you guys, we're way ahead of you. You don't know anything about our organization, and we're everywhere. Yeah, they're infiltrated. I kind of like that idea, but then they don't really go anywhere with it.
They don't do anything with it. And yeah, again, like how you were saying, like how this came up during...
You think they would lock down and be doing like background checks on all of their agents?
Yeah, like how you said this was like during the writer's strike, and you know, That's the reason Transformers 2 is that bad. I mean, if it hadn't been for that, that would be the greatest movie of all time. But, you know, that hit everybody. but, yeah, I don't know, something about... It just feels like they got to a certain point in the story, and it really does feel like they were handed, like, a first draft, and then somebody else, like, another writer was supposed to, like, finish it, and just never did, because there's so many things that just feel like... They had the idea started and then just never got to where it would be refined or adjusted to work. Like, I don't... Olga Kurylenko's character might as well be wallpaper, because she doesn't have, like, an interesting story at all. She has the most generic, like... I thought of it last night
as... She has the same story as Bond, almost. It's like, she has the exact same... kind of character arc.
She has Inigo Montoya's character arc. She has the Princess Bride, like, you killed my father, now you're gonna die. Like, that's her character arc. Her character arc is, they killed my dad and I'm mad about it. Like, it's the most generic, like, character arc you can give a character, and say she's mad because the dictator killed her family or something like that. And she doesn't do anything in the movie. She's, like I said, she might as well be wallpaper, because she just is there.
One thing that I think is nice is they don't really make her the love interest, because he's hung over on Vesper still from the last movie.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, who knows what they changed or what they cut, because they couldn't get a rewrite for it. Obviously, they kept action and they cut out most of the story. There are some people in this, like David Harbour, I think every time I watch this, I'm like, oh yeah, he's in it. And Chaplin's daughter.
I forgot he was in it, yeah.
What is her? She was in Game of Thrones. That she was Robb Stark's wife. The one that she's only in it for a little. She's like the person that general's trying to rape before Olga comes in and kills him.
Sure, I don't know who it is. I mean, I know who it is. Like, I've seen Game of Thrones, but like, I don't know who that actress is.
And I think she got the Christmas episode of Black Mirror. I'm Maybe. Pretty sure she did. I'm not yeah. really trying to convince you. I'm trying to share that information with whoever is listening.
Yeah, I do kind of, and again, it feels like another, like, half-baked plot item that doesn't go anywhere. Like, it could go somewhere more interesting. The idea of Dominic Green, the main villain, whose whole plan is to, I don't know, drain the water from the country and then sell it back to them at a super high price or something, which is, I don't know, a stupid idea to begin with. That again feels like something that they didn't come up with anything more interesting than. And also goes back to, that's what I liked about Mads Mikkelsen's character, was he wasn't the goofy, like, you know, Steve Jobs if he was a maniac character. And then they immediately went back to, like, what if this entrepreneur that's all about saving the planet was actually a bad guy? Like, they went right back to the stupid character that's not, like, a realistic villain
at
all.
They almost need for this one. Like, an Indiana Jones scene where they returned water to the people, and they don't have, like, any sort of, like, celebratory... Yeah.
There's no, like, closure to it that they did anything or
honestly,
fixed anything.
It's a weird moment in the movie where they bring up oil how many times... And Dominic Green is like, maybe it's not oil. And you have that scene after they crashed the plane in the desert. and like all those people are again ignoring them for some reason, even though they're the weirdest thing in that's happening. These two people that pulled up, and I don't know how many Fords were in this movie, Chuck, because you
they had to add the Fords to it. Yeah, we had to, they had to get more sponsorship from Ford for this one. I noticed that too.
The people were too thirsty to realize that there were these like this like UK guy, this British man, and this Russian woman that are in really nice clothes, covered in dirt, that had just come like from who knows where.
Like I was saying, with like plot elements that they felt like they never explore any further, the idea that the Americans are in on it, and we get Felix Leiter, who gets like a little bit more of a I don't know if I want to say more to do, but he comes back into the plot with David Harbour as his boss, and they're agreeing to let them do whatever they want, let the Bolivian dictator, the ex general or whatever, take back over the country, and they'll ignore him. Cause again, yeah, it's another one of those, hey, there might be oil, even though, again, like you said, every time they're like, I don't know, could be oil or could be something else maybe. And yeah, when he's like, well, you didn't find diamonds, did you? And he just goes, I don't know.
Cutting resources is bad or making money. Like, I don't think that's a bad plot point, but I don't know.
It's just the way it's handled, because again, like you were saying, like it doesn't go anywhere. Like it literally the only time it eventually happens at the end when we find out that they like dried up a riverbed and the people don't have water. And then he signs the paper to the general. That's like, there you go. This is your country now. Oh, by the way, like you have to buy my water from me. And the general like makes like a face like, oh, I can't believe I have to buy water from you. And Dominic Green just says, like, is real smart, like, oh, well, I could kill you if you don't agree to it or something like that. And he signs it over, and then that's just it. Like, the plot is never really brought up again about, like, how they were siphoning off the water. Like you said, there's not that celebratory moment of, like, returning the water to the people. Like, it's such, like, a bland, uninteresting, it could be an interesting plot point. But I will say the way the movie handles it, it turns it into a very uninteresting plot.
It'd have been better maybe if they swapped it, because I like how they do the throwback to Goldfinger and the woman's covered in oil instead of gold.
Yeah, that's a good
one. M raises that point, like, if there's no oil, how is she covered in oil? I guess someone just had a tub of oil somewhere that they dunked her in.
Yeah, someone just keeps that on hand with it, and it's And yeah, we never really get anything from the Americans about.
I want to know the person that dunked her in oil and got her into the hotel room without anyone like not getting oil anywhere else but the bed.
Yeah.
And then they do a weird transition where they cut to the scene and then they're already cutting away from the body. I'm guessing to keep like a PG-13 rating or something. I don't know. It's really weird.
Yeah, probably.
It's like you spend all that money on like the cool shot and you didn't even, you have it for like a second.
Yeah. Yeah. This is another, I don't know. I guess like they're trying to continue the overall plot of Bond evolving as a person to, you know, kind of continues over from the first movie where that one girl gets murdered when he leaves her at the house to go chase her boyfriend at the museum. And she gets murdered at the beach. And this continues on that kind of plot point of, you know, oh, how many people are going to keep dying? They do keep mentioning that
over and
over. Yeah,
Emily throws that on him. And he's like, I didn't, like, it's, oh, he doesn't say it, but he didn't send that woman to do anything. You know what I mean? Like, you sent him out there, sent her out there to get him and bring him back. Murder by association is what it is, essentially. He's getting people killed because of basically being a little too reckless. That's the idea. You're too reckless. You're getting innocent people killed when they shouldn't be killed.
Yeah, the idea. Yeah, and he kind of has that same, like, you know, like, yeah, well, I didn't send her out there or anything like that. But I do also like the they bring up also just the, that not even like the innocent people around him, but also like the criminals that he never brings anyone in for questioning. He always
just kills.
Hey, that's
another funny moment when M's like, can you please not kill any of our leads this time, or however she phrases that.
Yeah. Yeah, when he goes, when he kills that guy in Bolivia, and she's like, how did that work out? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it. She's like, you killed him, didn't you?
Well, I guess it's all set up for the final moment when he doesn't kill the guy that you think he would kill.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's like, that's where I think they're trying to really, really put that up as like, this is James Bond, and he kills everyone he comes in contact with.
Well, what is it? Mathis is like...
But now he learned a lesson.
Potentially a bad guy, but apparently isn't anymore. Like, his innocence has been cleared or something.
They're so... Yeah, that's another point that's, like, so vague. Like,
I like when he pulls him out of the trunk, and they, like, think he's dead, and they're like, oh, he's moving, and then he just gets shot again. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this guy. Yeah.
It's so...
And Vesper, that story goes back and forth, too, because it's like, she really wasn't a double agent. She was doing it for her boyfriend, who was a double agent. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, there's some stuff, like the Mathis thing in Casino Royale, you know, yeah, it's implied, Mads Mikkelsen says, like, oh, that was my friend Mathis, and he set
looks
you
like
up.
Your friend Mathis,
which seems like
my friend Mathis, which is a really good scene.
Which seems like such a, yeah, but it seems like such a dumb thing, because then in this movie they say, like, oh, Mathis actually wasn't working for him, and I'm like, well, that seems like a really dumb thing for Lashif to lie about, like, while he's torturing Bond, to be like, you know, Mathis is working for me. Like, it's like, this is a guy that you're definitely going to kill anyway. Like, why would you lie about that? But then it somehow turns into like, oh, we were wrong. And it's like the British government, like, paid him off or something like that. And, like, put him on this island that he lives on because, they had to admit that they were wrong. But then it's kind of blown over
a lot of things that get blown over.
I don't know. About a lot of things, like about, like, what, well, like, then why did Lashif say that you were working for him? Like none of that ever gets addressed. And then he eventually goes,
yeah, I never
with Bond
Lashif as a liar, like,
on this mission.
Villain, but he wasn't, he was very straightforward, yeah, about everything. It was just like, oh, you caught me. This is...
That whole thing didn't make sense. Yeah, that again felt like a weird, I don't know, like I could see that being a weird thing of they needed, like, to fill a plot point or something like that. And we're like, we could just bring Mathis back. How? Oh, we'll just say he wasn't a bad guy last
time.
Probably
what honestly happened was they had a first draft. They worked really hard on the set pieces and the action. And then the writer's strike screwed up the rewrite that would connect all this stuff together. And they probably, yeah, I don't know about most people, but just so they don't lose the people, they were their crew, their cast and crew, they wanted to hurry up and shoot. And at the time, even like the guy that played Dominic Green was pretty big. He had just come off that Diving Bell and the Butterfly movie, which is great. And what is it, France? It's like he was like one of the biggest actors in France at the time. So, I mean, Daniel Craig, maybe they were worried that he was going to get snatched up in a lot of things, but it almost seemed like everything Daniel Craig's done around the Bond era has been like a drama, a subdued drama, except for Logan Lucky, maybe, which is maybe his most standout role beyond Bond. It's so fun. You can tell he's just having a blast.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll play it on the No Time to Die episode, but I watched the clip last night of him basically like getting real emotional at the wrap of No Time to Die being his like last Bond movie and stuff like that. And
yeah,
he said something along the lines of like how excited he was, so happy to be on all these films. Like, he really did love being on all these films, and we'll get to it later where he essentially says Spectre made him one. He would rather slash his wrists than do another Bond movie. And then he says
he was
a little
dramatic. Yeah,
he's a little dramatic. He's an actor. He's a little dramatic about it, I guess.
I was gonna say, he's like gone back and forth on like, yeah, if you talk to him at one point, he's been like, yeah, I love doing Bond. What are you talking about? And then you'll talk to him like the next year and he'll be like, I don't know, man, maybe I'll just give up on this whole Bond thing. Like, whenever there'd be delays or something.
He seemed
like,
to be really into it up until, you know, Spectre. And it sounded like Spectre... We'll do our research on it. It took more time to shoot than he thought. They did a lot of reshoots. And I think what killed him more than anything was he was so damn exhausted. And the movie kind of was just mediocre, okay, critically when it came out. So fingers crossed. No Time to Die is great. I'm hoping for that, like, every other movie is good. I have the same thoughts for Indiana Jones, old Harrison Ford. I'm hoping number 5 is good, too. Give him another shot. See if Christoph Waltz actually has a good performance in this one. I mean, he's not terrible as Spectre. He's just not used well.
Yeah.
That's another thing. I think that's another thing. Like, Mads Mikkelsen is a really good actor, and the years since Casino Royale, he's proved it. And almost everything that he's in, he's exceptional. And he seems to be one of those actors that can kind of really pull off any production he's on. If it's a little bit more amateur, he brings kind of like class to it and makes it more interesting. Like, I think Hannibal was a great television show that was pretty much carried by him and the actor that played Will Graham. Like, those two made that television show. And it's just, I don't know. Dominic Green just, like, he didn't translate into a great villain in this one. But the next one, Javier Bardem does a fantastic job as villain. And I don't know what it is. I think it's because we finally get that payoff in the next film. We'll get into more detail when we do the episode. It gets more into Bond finally becoming that more sophisticated, Connery-esque Bond. And the story is super emotional. It's more personal than any of the four so far. Although Spectre tries to be very personal and just seems off. It doesn't make that much sense. So I'm kind of hoping that the fact that he decided to return for this last one, that the story's decent. Rami Malek is a good actor. The director, how you say his name? Fukunaga, who did the Fukunaga, first season of True Detective, and he's the first American director to do a Bond movie. I think he's a really talented guy, so I'm kind of interested to see what comes of it. I feel like 100% there's going to be a throwback to Dr. No with No Time to Die. I wouldn't be surprised if the character doesn't end up being Rami Malek or something. Like, I'd be really surprised if Dr. No's not in the new movie, since they're kind of doing like the beginning of Bond. That seems like where you would end it. Although it is also portrayed as if it's the end of James Bond's career. So maybe we'll get a James Bond death, maybe. I don't know. Can you kill him in a movie and make it fun?
Well, we'll see if they try.
Either that or they'd have to fake his death. It literally would be like the scene of Batman, or sorry, the Dark Knight Returns. Which isn't terrible, but it's a bit much. Like, how the hell did he survive that? Even if he jumped out early, he set off that...
Yeah, he jumped off of a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, even if he does ask if it's... I know we're talking about different movies. He says something to Morgan Freeman, like, is there autopilot? And it's like a bad joke, but it totally plays into the fact that he could have survived because that thing could have just flown itself out into the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
I saw a meme today that was another Nolan one. They're like, it was Christopher Nolan and then Padme. And it was like, I'm going to set off an atomic bomb in my next movie. And she's like, CG, right? And it's just his face. And it's like, it's CG, right? Yeah, Quantum of Solace is okay. But it's weird because they say it's a sequel. It really feels like an overstuffed fourth act of Casino Royale. Like, they could have just, if they just shortened the movie to maybe 40 minutes of figuring out more about Vesper's boyfriend, you could have made, like, an extended cut of Casino Royale where it just goes on just a little bit longer. Like, you could almost probably cut the end scene of Quantum of Solace and put it on Casino Royale, and it would just seem like it went together.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's, at the end of the day, that's his whole goal. No matter how many times he keeps saying that that's not his intention, is to just find out, you know, who's responsible for her death. that just plays out the entire film, and everyone keeps going, you can't just keep chasing after her killer. And he's like, that's not what I'm doing. And it's like, it's very obviously what you're
it's
doing.
It's strange to me that this movie seems to be influenced by so many other different movies of the time. And I think that's maybe why Skyfall ends up being so refreshing, is that it's a really good, it has really great modern action in it. It's got Roger Deakins, so it looks phenomenal. But then it gets into that classic Bond as to, like, what do we like about James Bond? What needs to be in this movie? And it's pretty much perfect. Up until the end, even the end's like, you know, that's the bow on the present. But this is just, I don't know, like you said, Jason Bourne. Or, like, the bad dialogue of, like, we want you back, I never left. It seems like something that was from Batman Begins or some shit. Like, I have no idea what these lines were. And I think Craig's fine. Like, Craig, angry and trying to figure out what the hell went wrong from, you know, with this organization that got, you know, Vesper killed. Well, she kind of kills herself. But anyways, him being set off is fine. But you can't be set off for an hour and 40 minutes straight and have your audience being, like, mesmerized by what's going on. How many action scenes in this movie were great?
Like I said, I like that first one. The first chase is a really great
chase. Do you think any of the other actions are scenes are terrible, or that they're just, it's just so oversaturated with these action scenes that they don't stand out anymore?
I mean, it's, I guess it kind of is both. Like, it is just too oversaturated, but like the plane in the desert thing isn't interesting. Like, it's not shot in any kind of, like, really interesting way. The final thing where it's just the entire hotel exploding. Yeah. And that's, like, the whole thing. It's just the hotel just keeps exploding, and that's not very interesting. Like, I really don't.
He, like, when he finds, what's her name? Camille, Olga's character. And she's all, like, huddled up from the flames, and she's having, like, PTSD, but he escapes by seeing another tank that he could blow himself, like, out of there, which doesn't even make much sense, because it seems like they're surrounded by fire, but they have to go the direction of the fire to get out of the place that he just blew up. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
how on earth he gets Dominic Green out of there after doing that? Like, just never, like, explained how he got out of there with him in a car and drove him out into the desert.
Well, at least they got out and Dominic Green was already crawling in the desert. So the biggest question is,
the biggest question is
where was the car? And I guess there must've been one that was not parked close enough to that building to explode. I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of
stuff.
The oil
thing is so stupid too, where they throw him oil. And he makes that line about drinking it, and, like, 2 seconds later, you have M just saying that they found him with bullets in his head and oil in his stomach. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's, like, things that could have been cool, but they didn't really have any time to make it interesting. I felt like the director is an odd choice, too, because he did, like, Kite Runner and those types of...
Finding Neverland.
Like, real... like, very emotional dramas. And then
he recently did Christopher Robin, which is a great movie. But again, feels more in his, like, feels more like what he was doing than...
I feel like people said he these action make an movies. Action movie, and that's why he went all action.
Oh, what are you going to make? Another sentimental drama?
And he's like, fuck you. It's all action in the next movie I make.
He's also he was also the one that did World War Z.
I didn't like Z too much.
Before they went in and reshot a good chunk of it anyway.
That's the reason I don't care for it so much.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like another movie that it's just too much all the time.
Yeah.
And that really takes away from stuff. Like, you would be better off having one great action scene in a drama, and then everyone would be like, oh, that fucking scene. And that's what kind of gives me hope for No Time to Die, because I think about the episode of True Detective where they do the 6-minute long shot where Matthew McConaughey is, like, infiltrating and getting that guy out of the the neo-Nazi camp or whatever that they're at. It's a great, really, like, tense moment, And and it's actually the rest of the episode that makes that scene so much stronger. So that's where I kind of have the hopes that this will probably can go somewhere more interesting, where it's like, yeah, where they kind of just failed left and right. Some things, like you said, the Bond girl, they made her not so much a love interest, which was nice, but her backstory was easily one of the worst.
Yeah.
Bond's character arc takes too long. He feels pretty much consistently one way the entire way through the fucking movie.
And then it's just different in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, like, they didn't even really describe how he found out did all this information about this girl. You know what I mean? Like, it's really weird, but I like the scene of him waiting inside the office, because it's reminiscent of the beginning of Casino Royale.
Yeah.
And maybe that was more so because they didn't know if they were going to continue the story of Daniel Craig's Bond. Because all the other Bonds, there's not, like you said, that one Roger Moore had that hillbilly sheriff back again. So, like, it is a sequel, you know. But a lot of them don't really connect in any other way. The story could be brand new, like the previous story didn't happen at all. And
yeah,
luckily, I think it was a smart choice to be like, all of the Daniel Craig ones are going to go together. Yeah, all the Daniel Craig movies are going to have one character arc. And we'll have to see how the next James Bond plays out after that. Do they go back to the old way? Well, I guess we have to wait and see what happens in this one. Maybe they hand it off to somebody else in the movie.
Yeah, that's like the weird thing that they've always done is, and that's what like most people have taken it to be in the films, is that they are generally all supposed to be in the same continuity, and that it's just, you know, that they change. Like there's a new, because we're told, I can't remember which movie it is, that we're told that there's other 00 agents. I know that pops up in one of them, and I can't think of which one it is. Several. That we're actually shown that there is supposed to be, like, yeah, there's one that like specifically has a scene, I think, where they're like all in a room, and they're actually like shown like 008, 00, and we're told that, you know, 00 is just specifically a designation. That's right. That might be what I'm specifically thinking of. I knew there was something where they specifically like mentioned it. So it's like, I don't know why they've never done it before. Like we're clearly told that there's other 00 agents, and that's just a code number.
It is a code number, but I think the way that it works is there's 9 of them, and there can't be any more than 9 at a time. And it's been played out before where we'll see soon. You can't, they don't even trust the 00 agents, except M really trusts Bond. But it gets weird because it's like, we kind of get those weird moments where Casino Royale had, I didn't know M really stood for, and she's like, don't you dare, instead of it being like more of a code name. And then there's been talk with, like, it seems like sometimes James Bond is actually his name. And then there's been speculation that James Bond is a code name.
Yeah. Well, because we kind of get a little bit more, like, from what it sounds like in, like, what you learn a little bit more of from, like, Skyfall and Spectre and some of the other, when we get into these next couple movies, that it kind of just generally sounds like they give these kids names, because it sounds like they're recruited, you know, basically very young, as like more or less like unwanted kids or orphans that they basically find. So I very much could see it just being that's supposed to be the idea, is that like maybe he did have a different name before, and like, but they recruited him like when he was so young that it's just like, oh, that's not your name anymore, your name's James Bond now,
right? Which I could honestly see him, if he were to die or retire, that the next 007 is also James Bond. Like, it's just the name that gets carried over at the position or something.
Yeah.
And then it would make all the Bonds their own people, essentially.
Yeah, it's like a weird thing that they've never, like again, we've been told and shown that there's other 00 agents, but from, like, series to series, when you got, like, different, you know, from Roger Moore to Timothy Dalton, or from Timothy Dalton to Pierce Brosnan, even though they would carry over other characters, like, the actor that played Q, that was, like, Q for how many films,
yeah.
Like, 20 movies, like, from Sean Connery all the way up into Pierce Brosnan's films. So there's obviously continuity there that this guy has been with all of these Bonds, but we've never been shown, or they've never really full on addressed that, like we were saying, like that James Bond is also like goes
Judy
with
Dench
007.
With as M.
Yeah, she went
she's been with two Bonds, but she doesn't act like there's Pierce Brosnan's been a Bond.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't act like there was one before him.
So it's like it's a weird, like, continuity thing, the way they play that. And yeah, we'll have to see what they do with going into this new series.
I think overall it's exciting that I really like that they have this character arc between all these movies, but honestly, it doesn't really work well from Casino Royale to Quantum. And it kind of does the same thing in Skyfall to Spectre. It's not as interesting as what it could possibly be.
Yeah.
So only time will tell. I'm excited. Feels like we're getting close. I guess I'll be back in a movie theater for the first time in over a year for Daniel Craig. That's where I will get the Delta virus, probably.
Yeah, that's when it finally happens.
And that will be the end of the podcast. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it'll go on. It'd be just you.
Yeah.
Because technically James is still a host, but I am uncertain of if he's going to be on another episode or not. So we are still the three amigos, technically, but I don't know. It'll change and shift over time. I like doing this podcast. It's just a lot of work when we work a lot. And we don't get paid to do this.
Yeah.
I've had people like, how much money have you made off of it? I'm like, nothing. I've lost money. To come out even would be pretty nice, though.
Yeah.
To be paid essentially just the equivalent of, you know, equipment and stuff like that. Because we keep upgrading, because it's like we want to sound better. We're still doing it remotely. That's why you hear dogs and crickets. And your and Chuck's mom
and all the, yeah all my
and
other
the
sounds.
Train and the siren,
just everything.
I might mix some of that stuff.
I'm surrounded by sounds.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like you would be. You're more in the middle of nowhere than I am, and you have all the sounds.
You have all the sounds.
You have everything.
I have the train. You have the T, but the T doesn't make that much noise.
We do have a real train every once in a while. But I think because it doesn't, it goes over top of the road and there's no crosswalk, it doesn't blow its horn and all that shit.
Probably.
Because I have seen it a few times and heard it, but it is a lot more rare. But yeah, I enjoy these conversations that we have. I always strive for them to sound better, whether it's me saying 40 times and I thought, oh God, you can speak better. You can hold a better conversation. To just trying to record and make us sound better overall. That it's not necessarily that it's difficult to do. It comes down to time. So when you're working a 60-hour work week, and then at night, like moonlighting as a mixer on a podcast, and the podcast comes out, and you're like, "That's the best that I could do with the time that I had." And we get overly ambitious, too, so we're going to try... That's the reason we're not doing all 25 Bond movies, is because we know we'll kill the quality.
Yeah,
and I guess... Yeah, and for the next couple months, we have a lot of stuff planned out, but maybe we'll take it back a notch and not have a weekly an episode every week, so we could put out, you know, a couple quality episodes at a time. Instead of it just seemingly nonstop episode after episode after episode. because my brain says, hey, we can put together this wonderful 5 Bond episodes together of the Craig era. We could do all this research and get all this stuff and make it sound wonderful. And then when it comes time to actually record, we are crushed physically by our real jobs. Because you just got off work now.
Yeah.
And for the sake of the podcast, Chuck is sweating to death in his bedroom.
It's too much.
And he looks like he has a nice new shelf behind him that I don't think I've seen before. I'm getting a different camera angle.
Yeah, you're just getting a different camera angle. I have not done anything new.
Ah, well, it's nice. I can't tell what's on it. Funkos or something, like little figures or something like that.
Pez.
Nice. It's beautiful, Chuck. I got a Grim Reaper hanging up behind me for Halloween.
You're all set for that.
Yeah, I set up all my Halloween stuff like September 1st. I got that animatronic Sam from Trick or Treat, and he's basically my Christmas tree. He goes up. What, you can only have him up for like a month? No, I'm going to have him up for 2 months. And he's in my house basically as my Christmas tree. And then when Halloween actually happens, I put him out there and scared the shit out of kids. I only got him last year for the first time, and we didn't have that many because of the pandemic. But he scared the shit out of at least 5 children. And I got joy out of that because there's something wrong with me. I was like, it scared the shit out of that little kid. Anyways, I digress. I don't really have anything else to say about Quantum of Solace. I don't think it's terrible, but it's definitely bad. Which really is the shame of it is that it actually has some decent action scenes. It's just overall kind of poorly put together, and it's not all that interesting.
Yeah. It's a low point. All I can say though is it maybe doesn't get as low as some of the other ones. Like it's still not as low for me as like some of the Roger Moore ones that are pretty rough. This is like a Timothy Dalton one. Like it's not great. It's just kind of not the quality that Bond deserves.
I ranked them. The last time that I watched like all of them together, I didn't rank them like my favorite to my least favorite. Mm. I just put them in a category of like best, middle ground, and worst. And Quantum of Solace, I still kind of stuck to my middle ground section because I felt that there was a lot of good in this movie. It's the overall movie that it just is brought down by the fact that it's just not that well written.
Yeah.
And if you look at my list of the worst, it's like Live and Let Die, The Man with the Golden Gun, Moonraker, License to Kill, World is Not Enough, and Die Another Day.
Yeah, that's what I would pretty much agree with.
And so far with the Craig era, Casino Royale and Skyfall are definitely two of the best. And I put Spectre and Quantum, at least middle ground Bond movies.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed, No Time to Die, that you are one of the better ones. I think Daniel Craig deserves to have like a good exit.
We'll see.
Again, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. That's where you'll see all our wonderful ads. They're all going to be James Bond ads. Surprise. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at JJMorgan19. That's where I say things like, I'm watching Quantum of Solace, and somebody's like, one person. I like that. I like that you're watching that. Chuck?
ChuckFinn66.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back. Hopefully next episode is a little bit longer and a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, probably.
Thank you everybody for listening.
Thanks.
We're Cinema de More. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It'd be greatly appreciated if you subscribe to our podcast and your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.